24chan pictures that will make you queasy. And he goes, number 15, Burger King foot lettuce. The last thing you want in your Burger King burger is someone else's foot fungus. But turns out that might be what you get. This whole clip. I didn't know you.
I'm a sheltered child of the internet, despite being terminally online. I do not know these things.
What is our topic that is not number 15, but number one in our mind currently?
This week we're talking about good stuff, but we're talking about good stuff specifically in the command zone. We're not talking about the 99 at all this week. We've kind of ignored mm-hmm. that in most of our episodes, and I think it's finally time for us to talk about the reason for the season, and that's Commanders. But before we get into it, Chase, where can the good people find the show if they are so inclined?
Well, I'm so glad you asked. The good people can find the show everywhere that podcasts are available, be that Apple Podcasts or Spotify, basically anywhere you can click and listen to our beautiful sultry voices. You can also catch us on the YouTubes for a beautiful visual version of this episode where you can watch the discomfort in EK's eyes as I talk about weird 4chan memes. And you should also like, comment, and subscribe because it does help us out quite a bit.
Are you ready?
I've never been more ready for anything in my life ever.
Okay, we're gonna play a game. I'm gonna say a word, mm-hmm. and you're gonna tell me the first thing that comes to your head.
Okay, easy, awesome.
Good stuff, Commanders.
The first thing I thought was Atraxa.
I mean, the numbers don't lie. The numbers agree with you.
Yep.
She is the most popular commander by a long shot.
Yeah, and for good reason. She's gorgeously amazing and perfect in every way.
And by that, you just mean like she literally does everything you could ever want and gives you four of the five colors?
Yeah, I like to call her Redless because she is the Redless commander. Mm-hmm. And she's so dope because you it doesn't matter what kind of counter that you proliferate. You could do loyalty, poison, you could do energy. Basically, she does anything and everything. Plus, she is keyword soup with a low mana value. What is she, four?
Four. Mana?
Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, no colorless pips, but I mean, four mana. Disgusting. I love her.
Atraxa is just like the quintessential good stuff commander because like she does everything. But a lot of these other good stuff commanders that we kind of think of, like Lathrol and Yuriko and the Eminence commanders, mm-hmm. Edgar, Ur-Dragon. You could even say Anala is like the good stuff wizards commander too.
Yeah, Arabo's a good,
you know, they're all just kind of really good at what they do. Almost too good at what they do.
Yes. That is a genuine fact, especially the Eminence commanders. When you have a deck where your commander affects the game, but you don't even have to cast the commander, it can just sit in the command zone. It is actually mm-hmm. more of a hindrance to you to cast it than it is to not. I find that
Edgar
to be a little bit nauseating.
Strictly bad to cast.
Why would you do it? You don't need to. Yeah. That's mana you could have used to play another vampire spell.
I mean, well, with the way that most people build Edgar, that's like four vampire spells.
There you go. It's just, it's definitely something, especially with mm-hmm. how, and we're getting possible reprints of all of these too as well. So this is a very topical thing because we did see in the, what is it, Commander Masters preview, we are indeed getting an Ur-Dragon. Big snaps to that. I love that, which means we are probably going to get the other ones as well. Honestly, it's not possible. Mad at that. Those price tags need to go down into the dumpster. But when we talk about good stuff commanders, we want to talk about how these are just monoliths within the format that are kind of immovable in terms of their replaceability. You can choose alternatives to these commanders, but odds are you're going to be choosing a strictly worse commander. And I'm going to do quotes for that worse because in my opinion, there's no such thing as a bad commander except like the old Mishra.
I would agree.
That's the only bad commander.
Challenge accepted. You know what?
Okay.
When I think of a good stuff commander, and you just touched on this. Mm-hmm. If you're going to pick an alternative, it's strictly worse. Or if an alternative is going to be printed, you're printing a strictly better version of what is already considered like some of the best, most popular possible commanders in the format. Like, how are you going to print a better Edgar Markov? Like, is it going to make two vampires instead of one? Is Super Ur-Dragon going to discount your dragons by three? Like you said, they are immovable. for the rest of ever, there will just always be Ur-Dragon decks. For the rest of ever, there will just always be Edgar Markov decks.
I had like a bit of like a little tweet thing where I was like talking about the new Atraxa and how I thought the new Atraxa was a huge letdown because it did not pay homage to its original design. And I had a conversation with some of the people who are on the design team. They posted it on Twitter. It was like a public conversation about how, you know, they had to build in like showcasing the new, like, you know, like the new like battle mechanic. But also someone said something, I don't remember who said it, but they says, how can you outshine the sun?
That sounds like a Chris thing.
It's such a good thing because you have Atraxa. Yeah. And I even used as an example. I used Kalia as an example. And I'm like, I like that the new Kalia is an homage to the old one. But the new Kalia is going to go into the 99 of the old Kalia. She's not going to be as good, as popular as that old original Kalia because that original Kalia is right here. So good.
This is what Chris and I talked about in Philly, actually. The solution for quote-unquote remaking these commanders is to just outright make them different. Mm-hmm. New Kalia is the same sort of, but just outright does a different thing than old Kalia. New Atraxa, same thing, just does a completely different thing than old Atraxa. And you can say that about the new, like the five color Niv-Mizzet doing something completely different than all of the three or four Niv-Mizzets of the past.
Yeah,
like they're just going off in a completely different direction. It's going to mean you're going to play a different deck. It's not the Edgar Markov that you know. And we did get a new Edgar Markov, actually, in Innistrad. And it's just a completely different deck. And I don't think that that's a bad thing at all. Like I like that. The biggest reason why we're having this conversation is there's a lot of these commanders that are coming out these days that are either so good that it's hard to make a bad version of that commander. They will never be replaced because they are that good of a commander, or you know, they give you all of the options that you could ever want. And it makes you beg the question, why would I ever play another commander ever again instead? Our hope is that you want to embrace the restriction of playing a Tarka World Renderer over Ur-Dragon or Tiamat, because you can still build an incredibly powerful, incredibly fun dragon deck without playing all five colors.
I'm really glad that you kind of brought that up specifically because it kind of clicked something in my head. I had, and we'll talk about this a little bit more, but like I had one of those commanders that's considered to be a good stuff commander, you know, Goshen Tai, you know, of Life's Origin is, in my opinion, considered to be a very good commander. And it's a very straightforward build, just like say an Ur-Dragon build would be, or like a Yuriko build or an Edgar build, you know? But I took it apart within around 2 months of me making it. And you know, I was so stoked on it too, because you were gone for me building that and getting through the process. But it was handed to me quite literally. The strategy was very, very easy. And I like to struggle, not to the point where it's almost impossible to play a deck, but I like there to be a challenge. And to me, it wasn't challenging, just like I feel like when you look at, you know, the comparison of like a Tarka and the Ur-Dragon, you have access to everything. So it makes it a lot easier. Whereas, you know, you're going to struggle a little bit more in a Tarka because you don't have that really good ability, or you don't have that really good tutor ability like you would like Tiamat or something. Like for me, struggling is fun.
I do want to preface something really quick.
Yes.
We are by no means like advocating like, oh, you got to play a hipster deck. Oh, you got to purposely struggle. Like it is totally cool to play a good deck, playing good cards, doing good things. Like,
yeah,
I have several decks that are doing that. What we're trying to say is you don't always have to do that. And I think a lot of people get demoralized by feeling the need to always do that. So,
oh yeah. You know, there are multiple ways to play the game. There are multiple ways to play certain archetypes. We're certainly not saying, you know, you're not allowed to go with the flow of what's popular. I think for me, I have in my journey as a deck builder, I have grown to desire that challenge more. But then again, we also have to say sometimes people just don't like certain colors, or maybe people just don't like certain archetypes or certain commanders, or maybe they hate the way the art looks. That has prevented me from building some stuff too.
It kind of begs the question though, like, are commanders these days just more powerful? Because that's a rhetorical question, because yeah, they kind of are. But I look at the most popular commanders on EDH Rec these days, and I'm conflicted on how I think about this, actually, because I think it's a good and a bad thing that most of the most popular commanders, even just over the last 2 years, are either like commander staples like Atraxa and Ur-Dragon, but there are a lot of like recently printed commanders.
Yes. I really, really, really hate using this term because I feel like, again, it's become one of those buzzwords that has lost its meaning entirely. Power creep is something I hate to say, but I feel like we're seeing that kind of happen in our commanders, especially in like pre-cons and stuff. We now have like starter pre-cons now instead of, because pre-cons used to be the intro into commander, but now they are so complex and involved and powerful that there needs to be an intro to the intro, which I find very fascinating. We could talk about that for days and days and days. But I don't know, when I first started playing commander, I went into my LGS and I asked the owner what the most powerful commander was, and he told me Niv-Mizzet Firemind. Now there's like 80 different alternatives to that.
Yeah,
just like there would be 80 different alternatives to say, like, you know, like an elves deck or a dragon deck, like any of those themes in particular. It's just, there's so many options that in order to prevent themselves from repeating previous cards, they have to kind of like amp it up or change it or tweak it. So of course you're going to see more powerful pieces being printed.
You bring up a point, like, you know, they're new, they're exciting. The fact that they're new and they're exciting and they're already this popular can be considered a good thing. It can be considered a bad thing because they, like you said, they have power crept all the other commanders for days. But at the same time, if something is that cool and that popular that quickly, that's like a total home run in terms of design on WotC's part. Like, that is amazing for them.
I mean, I feel like we should also take into consideration too, you know, like ease of access. You know, a lot of shops are going to have access to newer products, and, you know, they may not necessarily have that really cool older commander that's like 10 years old, but they will definitely have the new thing from like Phyrexia All will be one, you know?
I'm looking at commanders from like the past month. Most of these commanders are from a pre-con.
It's because they've amped up that power level for pre-cons. It's crazy.
A, the pre-cons are more powerful. The pre-cons are more exciting. They do really cool things. But B, the pre-cons are the easiest. The pre-con cards are the easiest cards to get your hands on by a long shot, because everyone's always going to have pre-cons.
I'm this might be me nitpicking. I'm going to challenge that just a hair. Sure. I think they used to be, and I want to say this. So you see, if we're looking at like past week, past 2 years, we're basing this off of EDHX data, by the way. You have like Atraxa, Lathril, Ur-Dragon, Ixul, Wilhelt. Those are all pre-con face commanders, right? But Atraxa and Lathril and the Ur-Dragon were from a time where pre-cons weren't like $50, $40, $50.
Yeah.
They were back when they were around like, what, 30? I mean, granted, now they're more expensive because of their popularity. But back then, they were easier to pick up because they were cheaper. And Lathril herself, she may be new, but she was part of that era of pre-cons where it was, what, $20 pre-con, $25 pre-con? There you go. A lot cheaper.
A lot of these really, really popular commanders are four or five colors. Is Commander moving towards like a four to five color format? If all the most popular commanders are four to five colors, is color identity even relevant anymore?
So if you had asked me this, I want to say a year and a half ago, I would have said yes. Asking me now, I'm going to say no. And the reason why is I see a shift, and we talked about this in our last episode, which if you haven't watched it, you totally should. But we talked about eras of green and stuff, but I think we can also apply eras to the eras of ways that commanders are being designed. And I think Wizards pays a lot more attention to us, the community, than we think they do. And a lot of us have been complaining about the five-color commander dilemma, where in the past we've seen a lot of commanders that are either colorless or one color in their mana value but have five-color activated abilities. So therefore, they are technically color identity 5C. So we're not seeing as much of that anymore with, you know, Ur-Tet being the one exception. And yet, there's a reason that it's okay that Ur-Tet is the one exception, but I don't think so now. But I, if you asked me a year ago, I would have said definitely.
I think that's a product of the people that we play with most often, who are also of the belief that color identity has become largely irrelevant. So they are pushing, they're cognizantly pushing back on this concept by building more two color decks, by building more three color decks. You know, you yourself, you're building a mono green deck right now.
Yeah, trying.
Like, we are going out of our way to not do that, despite, you know, what feels like a macro trend at times pushing us to do so. But there, you know, there's a common thread with all of these four and five color commanders, though. Like, they just, they do everything.
Quite literally, they do everything. I mean, I, in my opinion, this is the most iconic one, but it depends on who you ask. There's Kenrith, the Returned King, who himself
literally does everything.
He does, I mean, literally, because he's white. He's a white card, but he has activated abilities that increase in value based on of the color. He has red, green, I mean, every single color. And you can do this because, fun fact, the abilities are targeted. So target creature, target player. It, you can choose whoever you target. So you can choose yourself, you can choose other people, which is why Kenrith was originally a very popular group hug commander. And I see him played a lot with group hug, but he's just good for you. It's nauseating.
I had a Kenrith deck for one game. I took it apart immediately.
Because it was gross.
That was the most unfun game of Magic that I have ever played.
It just... it didn't match with your style because, again, you yourself, much like me, you like a challenge. You literally set out to do these things. Like with Saskia, you're like, I want to ban Saskia. Let me do all these.
I'm
going to
Golo Saskia, which is actually like a really good transition, because if we were doing this episode like 2 years ago, we would have said Golos is like the number one.
Yes. Like,
this is a problem, because we can ask ourselves the question, is this deck just strictly better if I play this four or five color commander in the place of the commander that I actually do want to play?
Yes. Yes. And yes.
For Golos, the answer was unequivocally yes. Like, basically every single time. And I feel like you could make the argument for Kenrith. Goshintai is harder to make the argument for, because that is like still explicitly a Shrines commander. Can't make that argument for Urtet, because that is mirrors.
Cody, though, you can make the argument for Cody. Cody is limited in what he does, but still does a lot.
Cody's literally a CDH combo deck. Like, Cody is incredibly strong. It's disgusting.
If I may.
Yeah.
I would like to make a formal apology. When Golos was banned, I was a stinker about it. I did not have a Golos deck, but I had friends who had Golos, who only ran Golos to play Gates, and my heart was shattered for them, and I was a little salty. But when I had a conversation as to why Golos was banned, I can clearly see as to why, because he literally gets you free junk, and he pays for himself by getting you a land. And guess what? It doesn't say basic. It says a land. Like, holy
crap. Literally
just
says, go get your cradle, go get your coffers, go get your Urborg.
Yes.
One of the most popular things to do with Golos was to flicker Golos just constantly.
Yes.
And just ramp into oblivion all the time.
Yeah. It was
right. I think this dilemma of the five color dilemma, the four color dilemma of, is my commander just better if I, or is my deck just better if I play it as a Kenrith deck, if I play it as an Ur-Dragon deck, if I play it as, you know, XYZ deck, if I just have more colors in my deck, is my deck better? You and I butt heads about this before we started recording, because I think it is incredibly possible to build a lot of these like popular commanders, quote unquote, better with less colors.
It's possible. It's possible, but I don't think they would be as good, is what I'm saying.
They'd be different, like, is what they would be.
Well, so I know that we had that conversation, but like, and this isn't me being like, you have to play the good stuff, because I don't care. Yeah. I'm building bad stuff all the time. I don't even call it bad stuff. It's just different stuff. But
stuff.
I would just say
there's no such thing as bad stuff.
No. But like, let's look at Atraxa as an example. You know, Atraxa is a proliferate commander. Let's say you want to do something with proliferate. If you look at the options available for proliferate in legendaries, you don't have a lot of the good stuff. You have like Yawgmoth himself is proliferate, but he's mono black. You have Tekuthal, mono blue, Azuri, which is Simic. You know, you're limiting yourself by what, two to three colors. There's so much that you're missing out on that I wonder if you stacked them against each other and you faced one against the other, I guarantee you that Atraxa would probably win that game, you know, unless there were extreme circumstances. Just by the sheer
density of good stuff that they have access to with more colors.
Yeah.
I think there's something to consider, though. A lot of these incredibly popular 3, 4, 5 color decks that just kind of excel above the rest of the pack, quote unquote, boils down to the concept of steak and sizzle. I don't know if you're familiar with this food analogy. So there's this concept of steak and sizzle where steak is the payoff for your deck, like the thing that you want to do. And you have to have a sizzling grill to get a good steak, to cook a good steak. Like what good is all of this proliferate? What good is proliferate in the command zone with Atraxa if you don't have anything to proliferate? You know, one of the biggest reasons why Tekuthal in particular struggles as a commander is, what is it proliferating? What are you doing with it?
Yep.
One of the reasons why Chulainn can struggle as a commander, it's just like, yeah, all your creatures are growth spirals, but what are you doing with it? You know, in the case of Ur-Dragon, it discounts your dragons. It's a 10 drop? Like, you're probably never really going to cast it and get the trigger to get all the free stuff. So what are you doing with a deck that just says your dragons cost one less?
Well, I would just go faster than you.
Yeah.
That's it. I would just be faster.
That's like, realistically, the only compelling reason to play these different commanders is they just do generically good stuff around a loose creature type structure or around a loose like deck concept.
Well, I mean, we've talked about how, like, the reason why these things are so exciting, like, why these are at the top is because it's way more exciting to pull these things off than it is to pull off, like, your example with, like, an Atarka. Because Atarka is definitely exciting. You're limited by your colors, but you very accurately said that you could probably do the same amount of stuff in an Ur-Dragon that you could do in an Atarka deck, because you said a lot of the good dragons are in those colors. But from a perspective of someone who, let's say I don't make content, we have no content creator perspective.
Just want a good deck, right?
Yeah, I'm just at my LGS and I want to impress my friends. I want to be this cool person. I want to do this cool, exciting thing. Can have everyone go, oh, that was sick. That was probably going to happen more when you do something with like an Ur-Dragon or a Tiamat where you get those buzz as, you know, Tarka. You do get cool stuff, but it's just not as like spicy.
There's two sides to this coin. There's like doing the thing consistently, doing it often, doing it powerfully. And the other side of that coin is doing that same thing, doing it powerfully, but doing it a little bit more, say, let's say like hipstery with something that's a little less common. Like you can build the powerful Atarka deck. You can do the big flashy dragon combo turn with Bladewing and Dragonstorm. Like it's totally possible to do all this kind of stuff. You can still do the crazy zombie turn with Scarab God versus
Wilhelt.
Versus Wilhelt, yeah. There's always a powerful alternative that's a little bit less popular. This is getting into last week's episode again.
No, but I love this. I love this. Keep going.
Like, does content, the social media cycle, the preview cycle, everything like that, do you think that has an effect on being pushed towards these popular commanders in one way or another?
Yes, 1,000%. I really do think so. I think we don't like to admit it, but I think we do. At my LGS, I hear people talking about like YouTube shows that they watch all the time, like a wide variety of them. Content influences people to do things. It influences the way we like read rules and the way that we look at like mana rocks and ramp and our mana base.
Two mana versus three mana, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, people say it doesn't or it doesn't to a certain degree. I would argue that I think that we just don't, it's not that we don't want to see it. I think it's just it's there, but we just don't really say anything about it.
Something that I kind of didn't think about last week when we were recording last week's episode was, just because you're not directly engaging with the content doesn't mean that the people you're playing with aren't.
Yeah.
You're still getting influenced by it, but it's influence secondhand or third hand.
No, 1,000%. I would argue that, and this is my personal opinion, so if I'm wrong and it's attributed to another person, by all means, correct me. But like, I remember Kristen was hardcore, like rooting for Crashing Drawbridge being like a dope card to give your stuff haste. Like, it came out in Eldraine. And I was like, oh, that's kind of dope. And I would see people like being up like, oh, I picked this up, it's dope. Oh, I picked this up, it's great. And I've seen a lot of Crashing Drawbridges being utilized ever since then. And, you know, maybe it's just, you know, my focus is so narrow. But like stuff like that, like creators impact things. Because if I take Crashing Drawbridge because Kristen says it was a really good card and I agree and I play it and I go to my LGS at FNM and I play Crashing Drawbridge, they're going to be like, whoa, that's so sick. And I'm like, yeah, Crashing Drawbridge is great. Then they're going to do it. And it just kind of cycles into each other.
Don't underestimate the power of the budget card that people haven't given a chance, and once they finally give it a chance, then they're sold. And I think the same concept applies to commander options.
Yeah, it does. It really does.
That being said, though, something that I've noticed in especially like recent times, as there's been more of a focus put on commander, it's that these decks that people have tried to give a chance to, people have tried to build over the years, they're like almost they're like the niche of the niche of the niche, have been getting a lot more love as of late. You know, they're like the Crashing Drawbridges of Commander, where they've existed, but they just needed their time in the sun, or they just needed that like one extra card, that little bit of love to like take them over the edge. And I think this is a very like interesting apex of this conversation, because we love seeing awesome new stuff hit, you know, make big waves in the format. We love seeing amazing new cards get printed, but they're almost like niche to a fault. So they're almost like too good to a fault in their particular niche.
I have a weird take on this, and I feel like others would disagree with me on this. Because I too used to be a very big like theme person. Back when I started playing Magic, I did a kitchen table decks for every like creature theme. I actually had an Azorius mirror deck back when I first started. And moving forward now, it's really exciting to see Urtai specifically is a really good example. That being said, I feel like getting these packaged commanders meant for your sort of how you said earlier, like paper clips and bubblegum type themes, while exciting at first, I think ultimately leads to a feeling of deflation, because you no longer have the excitement of being able to pull off something that was once considered to be kind of impossible.
And this is the moral dilemma behind it.
Yeah.
Now that really niche, really like cool thing is possible. Like you can play Worms now. Unironically play Worms with Barrow Wormspeaker.
Yeah.
And do it well. Do it really cool.
Very consistently, yes.
We didn't have that before. That's why I think it's so interesting. Like, I don't know how to feel about this, because it was impossible. Now it's possible. But is it too possible now? That's the first world problem commander player in me. Or just like, I do like to struggle. I do like playing the weird stuff. I do like needing like the three or four cards combined together in just the right way to do the ridiculous thing.
Yes.
Why would I do that when I can just play XYZ good commander in the command zone that just does everything for me now? It's a different type of commander for a different type of player is what I've boiled it down to.
If I may, something that I've noticed with this in particular, and this is genuinely just my own opinion, so please don't feel like this is an attack on your particular favorite commander if this is your favorite commander, but when it comes to this sort of like push niche sort of situation, I find myself actually feeling really bummed because I feel like the creativity aspect is kind of reduced almost a bit. And so I think a perfect example of that is Go Shintai. So back before Go Shintai was previewed, the way that you would do a sort of shrine theme deck in Commander was Sisei Weatherlight Captain. Because there was a fun little thing with Sisei.
Who in of herself, the good stuff Commander.
Of course she is, but she's a little bit more open-ended because she gets legendary anythings, mm-hmm. you know, so it's like a little bit more open-ended, but people notice you can get legendary anything. Oh goodness, literally every single shrine is a legendary enchantment. And so that yeah. made it kind of fun. And that was like that really interesting, excited spark to be able to do something with this. And now that you have Go Shintai, most people, when Go Shintai was previewed, went, cool, chuck Sisei out, now I can use Go Shintai. And that's a little bit of a bummer to me, to kind of abandon this really cool sort of ingenious deck building puzzle, and you have something that's just kind of like, it breathes and it does what it's supposed to do. And this is coming from someone who has a Sisei deck and also had a Go Shintai deck.
It doesn't invalidate the Sisei Shrines deck. It just changes the dichotomy of what that deck is, or what that deck can be. It can be a Sisei Shrines deck, or it can be a Go Shintai Shrines deck. You can do either.
I was actually going to say, I feel like I'm more kind of critiquing design, but that's just my own perspective on it. I'm not saying the design is bad. I'm certainly not. I'm just, you know, I think it's important for us to look at, you know, the trajectory of design, particularly for commander focused cards. And just, you know, keep that in touch a little bit in our minds, because I'm definitely not saying, oh, Urtet's a bad card. You should definitely do Morrifon only, or, you know, because Morrifon was the original, you know, Urtet.
Yeah.
It was like, you can't do this one thing, you got Morrifon.
I do like that exists. I would rather more Urtets than Morrifons.
Yes, to a certain extent. I think that if Urtet wasn't mirror focused, I would disagree with you, because Urtet does kind of fall into that realm of the 5C dilemma, where it's literally a colorless 5-mana do anything. Yeah. But because it's mirror focused, you don't have that issue like you would with like Cody or Golos. But because it's so focused, that's why I feel like that card is redeemed in my eyes. But yeah, when it comes to card design, I definitely like to be more critical. And if I'm wrong, I also like to be wrong about it. Because that's how you grow as a commander player and as a deck builder. You know, card analysis is so hard. And there are cards that we thought the sky is falling and nothing happened, you know?
Shout out to every push that's just kind of mythic ever, am I right? I think you could actually kind of use that language with a lot of these niche kind of cards. Yes, they've like redefined the niche of a commander card. But like, before we started recording, I was like, is Bellacor the Dark Master like just completely invalidating every demon commander ever? But like the last 30, 40 minutes that we've been talking, I'm almost glad that it exists now, because it's created a different way to play demons. It's not a better way to play demons. It's just a different way to play demons.
Yeah, no, it's definitely different than your Rakdos, you know, ETB, flip a coin, possible destruction. This is way different because it gets you an advantage and it lets you deal direct damage without nuking the board, you know?
I think that logic can be just used blanketly across the board. A common trend with commander design, or like legendary design, I should say, in particular these days, has been take this thing that you like in these particular colors. Mm-hmm. And change the color identity on it and see what happens.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of the times it becomes very, very interesting. Bellacor is one of those examples where it's take that Rakdos Demons deck that you love and add blue. Yeah. Well, what does adding blue to it do? You get all the
card draw.
You get bounce spells. You get flicker for Bellacor to get more card draw. Your Reflections of Lit Yara to get extra token copies of your demons, like all that kind of stuff. Like, that's fascinating to me. I think adding these different colors to these decks that we have typically seen for a while, they're changing the formula. I think that's interesting. Mm-hmm. Versus, let's take this 2-color, 3-color kind of deck that you enjoy, and let's just make it 5 colors and see what happens. I think adding 1 color is a lot different than adding 2 to 3 colors.
If I could, I really wanted to fit this in here somehow, but I'd like your opinion on this. How do you feel about, say, partners or backgrounds in this particular concept, because it is the ultimate form of customization within Commander, because you can literally pick and choose your colors. I mean, there's even, what is it, like the Piper that lets you choose a color for your partner, or yep, you can choose the background that lets you choose a color for a background.
Personally, I'm not a fan of it, but I'm not going to stop someone from doing it. We'll use Joey's Tana Timna deck as an example. Yes. Joey, a beloved friend of ours, has it. Mm-hmm. Tana Bloodsower, Timna the Weaver deck that is like the Commander deck. It's all the cards that say Commander on it. It's backgrounds.
Lieutenants.
On the one hand, you have a deck like that. But on the other hand, you have Tana Timna, Blood Pod, CEDH. Without having a conversation before you sit down and play with your opponents, they don't know what you're playing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like your Cedrus deck. They don't know what you're unearthing without you actually saying something. Whereas a lot of partners are like that. A lot of background decks can be like that. Versus if I just sit down and I have Miriam in my command zone, if I sit down, I have a Tarka in my command zone, you know exactly what you're getting yourself into. If I have Mural, the new soldier commander, you know exactly what I'm trying to do just by seeing the commander. And this is actually one of the good things about a lot of these newer niche commanders that are being printed. I know exactly what you're trying to do when you sit down with Lindy. I know exactly what you're trying to do when you sit down with Zerim Goldenwind. Like,
yep,
you're playing curses, you're playing griffins.
Yeah,
we're good. You know, you're not trying to hide this convoluted concept behind a Morophon. You're not trying to hide this niche concept behind Thrasios, File Smasher, what have you.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's made the communication that much easier.
That's fair. I can definitely see that perspective. I have mixed feelings on partner in itself. I just find this to kind of be interesting to fit into the conversation of good stuff commanders, because what is not
better? Because they do boil down to good stuff.
Well, what is not better than you being able to literally customize your strategy by picking two different cards and suddenly they work together? Or even that, shove a companion in there and then you get extra, but that's another conversation for another time. But I find it to be absolutely fascinating that it is the ultimate form of customization within color identity that you are not really granted anywhere else in the game.
My shtick boils down to, I don't like having my hand held through the entire process. That's a me thing, though. I understand. I've been playing Magic for almost a decade at this point. Mm-hmm. I have been working basically full-time doing Magic for 3 years at this point.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot about Magic. I do a lot more Magic. I stay a lot more engaged with Magic than most people. The thrill of the struggle is a lot more novel and a lot more exciting of a concept to me than it is to the average player who just wants to just play that cool soldiers deck or play that cool dragon deck.
Exactly. And I think, but that's a really good point that you did, because literally before we started this podcast, I was telling you about the three commander decks I'm building, and one of them is one of the original Elder Dragons, which is the most struggliest of struggle commanders you could possibly ever
make. I believe my words were to a T, why would you do this to yourself?
I think you called me brave.
I did call you a brave soul. I didn't even know which of the original Elder Dragons you're doing. I didn't need to know to make that assessment on your situation. Yes. I'm building a commander from Legends right now. Like, I'm building his Azen Tamar. I could be building like one of the new, like really amazing, awesome landfall commanders. Like I could be building new Omnath. I could be building the new his Azen Tamar from Dominaria, like the Legends retold, but I'm not.
Or you could build the new five color Omnath that we just saw previewed, which is guess what, another five color commander.
But to their credit, that is a five color commander that cares about three color cards. That is taking the five color dilemma and saying, you know what, this dilemma is actually even more of a problem, but it actually isn't.
Yeah,
all of those. Take a cool thing that you like, add a color, kind of commander cards. Those are all of the cards that are going in that deck because they have more colors in them.
They do.
That's cool. That's interesting to me. That is reinventing the formula usurping expectations.
We're seeing this shift in card design, which is why I said, if you had asked me a year ago, I would have said yes. But if you ask me now, I would say no, because we're seeing them pay attention to our concerns and our desires as players. We like the struggle. We like to figure out the puzzle, and this is a way to do that. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I said what I said, because we're growing with our commanders, and they are growing with their designs, which I'm really happy to see kind of manifest now after however long.
I'm gonna need you to follow me on this analogy, but I think you're onto something here with this, like, this whole puzzle idea. The easiest part of the puzzle is the edges, and the quickest part of the puzzle to figure out is filling out that edges. Filling the inside of the puzzle is still going to be the hardest part. So filling out the 99 of your deck is still going to be the hardest part building all of these different commanders, of building all of these different niches.
The guts are hard. The guts are hard. And there's a lot of cards that, you know, let's say you're doing like Ur Dragon, you're going to put in all the quote unquote good staples. But at the same time, you know, there's so many good staples, which goes in in place of the others.
Those are the words that I was trying to think of.
There you go. Or like the pet cards, the cards that you enjoy, but you don't, but you want to run over those quote unquote staples because, you know, there's so much access to good stuff. It's like, which good stuff do you use?
And that's kind of the lane that I've taken with a lot of my deck building. Like if I if I look at the decks that I have built right now or am planning to build, the majority of them are like the more popular commanders in the format.
Yeah.
It's just not done in a way that you expect. You know, I have good building blocks to build jank on top of. And I think that's something that people can take into account when they're trying to figure out what they're trying to do. I think that's the case for everybody. It's just you have to just dig a little bit deeper and go a little bit more extreme in your concept to make some of these more like kind of vanilla commanders compelling. I don't think that's a bad thing.
I don't think so.
It's that's the personalization. That's the creativity that people are trying to embrace with the format. So I think it's to tie a bow on everything. It's less about like color identity becoming less relevant, and it's more about the customization outside of the command zone that's becoming more relevant to make these powerful platforms for nonsense compelling and interesting.
If I may I ask you one parting question?
You are allowed to do whatever you want.
Why do a lot of these legendary creatures sound like the names from medications? Bellicor, Urtet, Zerium.
Zopandrel sounds like an antidepressant.
Literally, you said Zopandrel, and I was like, what? Like, if they're gonna make a commander in the next year called Dopyramate, I'm gonna lose my mind. I'd be broken. Thank you all so very much for watching this week's episode of Bad at Magic. If you don't know who I am, my name is Chase, also known as Mana Curves. You can find me everywhere at Mana Curves, streaming Paper Commander on my Twitch channel, as well as deck building. And I also write articles for Star City Games.
And I'm Eddie K. Plays Cards on all of the things. I work behind the scenes with most of your favorite content creators these days. So if you're supporting them, you're also supporting me. You can support this show by clicking the things that make all of the dings and give us all the good brain chemicals, like liking this, subscribing on YouTube, leaving a comment to feed the algorithm overlords, because we are trying to defeat them. So if you like what you heard or like what you saw, do that. You've made it this far in the episode, so it's not a big ask. We will see you next week.